Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. Yes, got to give the people what they want. My name is Daryl Clark, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. For those of you who received this week's announcement, you know we have another riveting program in store for you. And as always, it is news for you, by you, and of you. With so much hitting the mainstream, there's so much that we can talk about that will not be influenced by business or by politics. Our first guest will only be able to join us for a short time. And what he's going to bring is important. And it's also, especially with what we do, news for you, by you, and of you. And so, as you may realize for our listeners who we're referring to, it is Mr. Lawrence Ham. Lawrence Ham is truly an advocate for truth, freedom, and equality. As our bumper tune by one of my favorite artists, the OJs, mentioned, that that's what people are looking for: truth, freedom, and equality. And so our first guest, Mr. Lawrence Ham, is going to have a special message about just that: truth, freedom, and equality. Mr. Lawrence Ham will be joining us just momentarily, and it will be very briefly that Mr. Lawrence Ham will be speaking about truth, justice, and equality. So without further ado, I bring to you Mr. Lawrence Ham.
Good evening.
Lawrence, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. I'd be remiss if I didn't say it is truly an honor, considering the things you've done and looking forward to what I see you doing with regard to truth, justice, and equality. Can you tell us a little bit about what you are doing in that venue, in that vein?
Well, on Saturday, July 25th at 12 noon, we will have the Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice. It's scheduled to start at 12 noon at the Lincoln Monument in Newark, New Jersey. And I hope that everybody that is outraged by what has happened to Sister Sandra Bland down there in Texas and what has happened to the 9 people that were killed in the Emmanuel AME Church in Charleston, South Carolina, and to the victims of police brutality throughout Jersey, such as Abdul Kamal and Jerome Reed and Kashad Ashford, as well as in other parts of the country, such as Michael Brown and Eric Garner and Rakia Boyd and Ayanna Jones and many others, the people who are outraged about police brutality, about racially motivated violence, will come out and join us in Newark, New Jersey on Saturday, July 25th.
So what prompted you to take that extra step? I mean, there's been so much going on. What prompted you to say, okay, enough is enough? Was it one salient thing, a combination of things? What was it? You've been an advocate in the community for decades, Lawrence. What was it?
Well, I think clearly the trigger for everybody was the murder of Michael Brown. I mean, we all have had horrific cases of police brutality throughout the state. But I think the murder of Michael Brown is what really triggered people to go the extra step in communities across this country, because ours is not the first demonstration, nor will it be the last, nor will it be our last demonstration. But I think we decided, you know, we wanted to step it up, so to speak, to build an even bigger than our usual demonstrations. It was the murder of Michael Brown, who was shot to death and then body left to lay in the street for 4 hours, which we believe was an attempt to send a signal to terrorize the rest of the black community there in Ferguson. And so I think if we go back to Ferguson, that really is what caused us to begin to think about doing something bigger. And that's why we call this one the Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice, and Economic Inequality. Of course, we hope to get a crowd that's 10 times the size of the one we normally have, but we also call it millions because we know that millions of people across this country are opposed to this police brutality, this killing of unarmed black people, the murder and the torture and the terror. And this is not hyperbole. This is these all reflect cases that police have been convicted of murder. Police in Chicago were convicted of torture. And we can see even the way Sandra Bland was handled, that this is terror. You know, he said, that police officer said to her, "I'll light you up." you know, that was designed to terrorize her, to strike fear in her. And so we want an end to this police murder and terror and torture, the abuse of people's rights, and that's why we call this. And then that would have been enough, but the next incident would have been enough by itself, and that was a white supremacist, racist, walking into a black church and sitting there with the people while they have Bible study, and then getting up and shooting his 45 caliber Glock. And when he emptied the gun, he dropped the clip and reloaded and shot some more till he killed 9 people. And then he told one lady, he said, "I'm going to let you live because I want you to go and tell other people what happened here." See, that's terror. That's designed to terrorize the community. But we are not going to be paralyzed with fear. We're going to fight back on Saturday, July 5th, and the rest of this year.
So I take it that this is a precursor to what many people are aware of that will build momentum towards the Million Man March, which is, I guess, the 20th anniversary in the year.
Yes, we will be participating in the Million Man March, and I guess this is the first show that I'll announce this on. Since you asked about it, I've been asked to be a coordinator for the Million Man March for New Jersey to play the role I played 20 years ago. So, we will urge people to participate in a lot of upcoming events. I mean, this whole thing on Saturday is designed to make people get active, not just to be active on Saturday, but to get active in their communities.
Well, that's what our program is going to be about, and you're very, very busy, but if you have a chance, archives, we have a brother, which you're familiar with, Mr. Kevin Porter out of Texas, and he's a civil rights activist himself and doing good work, and we're going to be, as I know, you have to get back to your POP organization and get them geared up, because you've got to be going into those final preparations for this week. Looking forward to seeing you this week. But Mr. Porter is going to pick up where you're leaving off, talking about the importance of critical importance of act. So my brother Lawrence, we're with you. Our energies are with you. We're going to continue to support this. On your way out, give us again another shout out about the Facebook initiative that's going on, and how people can get involved.
People who want to participate in the march, if you are on Facebook, go to the March Facebook page. It's called the Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice Facebook page. Go to that page, and if you're coming to the march, join that page. After you join, there's a little blue envelope there that says friends. If you tap that little blue envelope, an entire list of all your friends on Facebook will pop up, and you'll be able to either select the ones you want to invite or invite all of them to the march. And then there's another little envelope, a black envelope. You tap that, and that allows you to share that page on Facebook. So you want to join, you want to invite your friends, and you want to share. And if you do that, you will help spread the word to hundreds, if not thousands of people. And I have to say, people are doing it, because through Facebook, thousands of people have been invited to this march. And I'm going to have to go, and I thank you, and I look forward to seeing everybody on Saturday.
All right. Well, we thank you so much, Lawrence, for the work you're doing. And, of course, we'll stay linked and continue to support and promote the work that you're doing. Thank you once again, Mr. Lawrence.
Thank you.
All right, so you've heard it, folks. You heard it here. we are moving forward in action, not just words. This isn't just a talking heads a radio program. We're about action. And so before we leave the airwaves today, and we're going to have more than just one initiative. I mean, you already have the one. You know, go to the Facebook page in case you did not catch that. It's Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice. No spaces. That's it. Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice. Tap the blue envelope to invite folks. And tap the black envelope to share. That's what this is about. Joining, inviting, and sharing. It's action-oriented. Folks, it really doesn't matter if you're black or red or white or yellow or whatever the persuasion is or religious affiliation. This is about simple justice. And you know it's been a week or two since I've mentioned one of my favorite quotes from Dr. Martin Luther, Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. In a real sense, all life is interrelated. All men are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Whatever affects one affects all. Whatever affects one directly affects all indirectly. I can never be what I ought to be until you are what you ought to be. And you can never be what you ought to be until I am what I ought to be. And this is the interrelated structure of reality. So, folks, we're all in this together. This really isn't about color, as some of our guests, especially one of my frequent guests, Mr. Dr. Ron Crenshaw, says, this really isn't about black and white. It's about social injustice. It's just a matter of who's on the bottom of the totem pole at one given time, relatively speaking, in terms of economic equality, inequality, and injustice. And right now, the statistics all unequivocally, unquestionably, point to the African-American race, here in the United States at least. And so this being the country it is for the people, by the people, and of the people, it's not going to change unless the people stand up and make a difference and stand out. And so we have folks like Lawrence Ham, truly a well-renowned, respected advocate for people, especially of African-American persuasion. He's a community activist. He's the co-founder of one of the most fastest-growing progressive organizations, People's Organization for Progress. It's an independent grassroots organization that just stands for civil rights and human rights. He's a relentless advocate for the people. And he's been at it for over 35 years since he's graduated from Princeton University. Our next guest is another relentless advocate with not quite as many years, with several numerous decades behind him as Lawrence Ham has, but he's on his way with well over a decade of hard work and crusading for human and civil rights. He's been on our program before, and it's truly an honor, and I mean that, to have our next guest because he walks the talk. He truly is putting out effort, energy. That's critical. I'm talking about Mr. Kevin Porter out of Texas. So in our last 3 months, we've seen a lot of atrocities hit the mainstream. Now, remember, these are just the tip of the iceberg. for every one of these incidents, just know that there are tens of other ones just like it. The young lady at the pool party who had the police officer do his little flip across the grass and then put his knee in her back. That was out of Texas. And now we have Sandra Bland, who allegedly committed suicide on the heels of an unnecessary arrest. So I would say to you, I question that suicide. I don't believe that that's what took place. Just my opinion, which I have every right to. But if you don't want to give that any credits, at least give credits to the absolute facts. And we've seen the videos, and if you haven't, just Google it or YouTube it. And you'll see unquestionably that was an unnecessary arrest, which ended up in this young lady's death. And so now I see a common thread, a pattern. See, I learned early on in grade school, like all of you, all you need is 2 points to start a pattern. And 3 points, you have a pattern. So now we have an affront on children and women. And it's interesting because I was speaking with an individual who I have respect for a great deal, and I consider a mentor and a friend, Dick Gregory, as many of you know. And I spoke with him this morning, in fact. We spoke briefly. He was just getting in the country. He's been traveling. And he told me over 2-3 months ago when we were having breakfast, he says, "Daryl, this is just the beginning." This was on the heels of Ferguson, Michael Brown. He says, "Just the beginning. They're going to push this envelope until people stand up. And it's going to get worse." This is a quote. I remember when I would talk with him this morning, I said, "Dick, you know, we haven't talked in a couple months or a couple, almost 2 months." I said, "But I remember you told me this was going to happen." He says, "Yeah, and it's not going to stop." You see, we started out with Michael Brown. It wasn't starting with Michael Brown. We can go all the way back. But then when they started killing Tamir, this is a boy with a toy gun. And with how many seconds? I mean, we're talking within seconds, the police arrive and shoot him. I've had police officers who I know, and I respect the police significantly. I have numerous individuals who are police officers who I consider not just colleagues, but friends, literally. And to a number, the ones that I know have stated that was against protocol. So we went from that to now assaulting en masse women. So when a culture or societies, women and children beginning getting assaulted, that's the ultimate. So where does it stop? And with that, I want to bring to the airwaves Mr. Kevin Porter, because I know he's done good work. He's even written a book. His most recent book, in fact, is titled Angry Little Men, Hypermasculinity, Academic Disconnect, and Mentoring African-American Males. But you'll find that Mr. Porter's outreach is not limited to just males. That just happened to be his most recent book. And what I love about his book is it keys on solutions. So I want to have a dialogue with Mr. Porter, and we've had a discussion in days and weeks past. We have made a commitment with others who have been on my show that we need to put something together, some action plan for African Americans and our society at large. Because as my good friend, Dr. Joy DeGruy, has stated, the victims are not just always the apparent victims, in this case African Americans. The victims, whether they know it or not, are also those who are committing the crime. They just, in some cases, don't realize it. So I bring to the airwaves Mr. Kevin Doc Porter to have a discussion about this and then lead into some solutions that we'll be carrying on in the weeks ahead. Welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. Kevin, it's a pleasure and an honor, and I mean that. It really is, because of the work that you've done, to have you on the airwaves with me.
Brother Clark, it's very, very good feedback on the show, and I want to thank you for having me on, and I'm looking forward to our discussion today. It's time to get busy.
Yeah, it is. It's by some folks' standards, past time. But there's no time like the present time, because it is a gift. And if we don't use it, we will lose it. And that's why I brought up that little brief conversation I had, significant conversation I had, because there's nothing really little about it. It was short, but it was impactful with Mr. Dick Gregory this morning. And he said, "Daryl, we need to talk." So he'll be joining us. He'll be joining us in the next couple of weeks to give his insightful perspective about all of this. And he'll be joining us, Mr. Kevin Porter, in this crusade to confront this heinous pattern that's taking place in our country. Yeah, I was impressed. You sent me a brief outline of some thoughts that you had, and it was impressive that you put some conscious thought into what we might be able to at least start to think about to work through some solutions. Before I go there, this issue with the woman that allegedly committed suicide, it was out of your state of Texas. And in all due respect, I just won't move past that without giving you an opportunity to speak to that. Now, as a Texan yourself, what is your perspective?
My perspective is that this, not only Texas seems to exemplify the disorder that we see among our police officers, the disrespect that we see among our police officers. And why Texas is the prime example is because Texas is becoming more browner and browner by the day. So white police officers are feeling more threatened and feel they have to be more abusive and controlling by the day. They walk with a chip on their shoulder, and they try to inflict harm and terror no matter the gender. And you would probably see it more in the Hispanic community, only a lot of times Hispanic will not tell because of their illegal status in this country. They don't want to get in trouble and get deported, so they may take it, whereas we're going to stand up and tell them that we have rights and we deserve to be treated like human beings. Texan is a funny state in the sense that most of the white men and women feel entitled to do things that go contrary to where this nation is going. Texas is one of the states that will openly badmouth President Obama, even despite the fact that the country has improved. Texas is one of the states, if you look at the death row and the number of deaths on death row, Texas is probably the leading state for that. So Texas has a very, very unique and a very dangerous mindset. And let's not go all the way back to Juneteenth. Texas didn't want to free us anyway. So it was already in the charts to keep African-American people down. And now they feel a need to do so even more because Texas is becoming more and more browner.
That's a unique perspective that I think many people can resonate with, and what you've given being there is an affirmation. Because I had even thought that myself, that, boy, those border states must be getting it.
Yes. Yeah.
And Texas, well, as you said, going back to Juneteenth, it already has a history. So when I add that piece to it, when I say a history of having an affront against minorities. And
right.
That's not to say other states don't. But it was in Texas that so many atrocities have taken place over the centuries, over the decades at least. So now with this heavy influx, it only makes sense what you just said. So now stepping back and looking at this trend across the country, and you mentioned Obama, I question at least if it's not a coincidence that he happens to be our president, that we're seeing this massive, massive assault on Americans and other minorities.
Right. And I believe it is. I believe it is somewhat of a retaliation. When you have a president, before he even steps into office, when the other party, the Republican Party, says, you'll be a one-term president, we won't help you. And when he wins the second election, they said, we still won't help you. So it is that kind of mindset. When you have politicians saying it, what are you telling the people? Well, yeah, he's just a black man that we're not going to help. The numbers may vote him in, but for our party and the people who believe like us, let's give him a hard time. Let's give anybody that looks like him a hard time. And I think it's intentional. I think it's intentional. But what I want to talk about, how do we attack, how do we be offensive and not defensive? Let us be proactive and not reactive to all this. Because in my mind, in my heart, despite the fact that I don't want anyone else to lose their life, I don't want any more abuse, we know it's going to happen. We know it's going to happen. What do we do to put in position so that we can be on the offense instead of the defense? Marching is a wonderful way to gain attention. But what we want to do is put laws in place and put acts in place to handle situations like this. We want to be proactive so that everyone knows that if a police officer does a certain act, then he is going to be either terminated or be brought up on charges. We need to have a police reform act. And this needs to be something that goes to legislation. We need to change the power we give the police. Because in my mind, they are not serving the community. They are not serving the people they are supposed to protect. They are terrorizing the community and terrorizing the people they're supposed to protect. And we need to change it. And the way we change it is by law. The way we change it is to make it known that we will not only hit you financially, we will hit you with criminal acts for actions such as this. When someone dies in the custody, then there should be immediate termination, immediate jail time, immediate no bond. Because these people are trained to protect. Police officers should have respect of the community, but you have to earn that respect. I truly believe that most white police officers have very little experience with African American people. And what I mean by that is, when the police officer asked the young lady about her attitude, he should have known that she was angry, that she had a problem, and that she was going to voice her opinion. If it had been an African American man, I guarantee you he would have understood why the sister was upset, and he would have just let it go and probably apologized and sent her on her way, as opposed to trying to get the woman out of the car because his small ego got hurt. This is about ego. This is about entitlement. This is about white officers not being properly inducted into our community and understanding the values of our community, the way our community communicates, and what our community expects. We don't have a problem with the police. The police have a problem with us.
You know, here's something I want to speak to, and I'm going to come back to that proposal for a police reform act, because I believe that as well. We need something of that nature. But I got to reflect back on where are the African American law enforcement officers in all this? I've yet to see Ebony. I mean, there are police fraternities. I've yet to see one step up, because those are national fraternities. I've yet to see one step up and say anything about this. Is that fraternity so strong that it would turn its back on something that goes beyond that? If you join a fraternity, and you can relate to this,
yeah.
I'm in a professional fraternity, but not a social fraternity. But in that, I understand social fraternities and have friends who are very, very, very much active and involved in social fraternities. And there are, you know, there are numerous fraternities, as you know. And in order to join any Greek, if you will, fraternity, you have to know about the various types. So I understand that there are professional fraternities which involve a specific industry or choice of a profession, whether it's a doctor or a journalist fraternity or a business fraternity or a lawyer's fraternity. As a professional, then you have a social fraternity, of course. You have your Alpha Kappa Qs, which we refer to in the African American community. And then, of course, you have your honors fraternities. So, from a social fraternity perspective, and even a professional like a police fraternity, would you put that before your family? I mean, I'm in a professional fraternity, and we had to do all the little things that we had to do to make a commitment to brotherhood. But you put it, would you put it before your wife? Would you put it before your husband? Would you put it before your mother?
Now, let me talk on that from a perspective of being a member of a Greek fraternity and try to put it in perspective where hazing is against the law. It is against the law, and it shouldn't be done, but it was done, and participation in it when I was a young man, yes, I did. Does it still go on? I'm sure it does, and I do believe it does. When something goes wrong with it in private, we do not condone it. However, if we came out as a group to say something against the organization that we took an obligation to support through good and through bad times, then we would also be essentially shooting ourselves in the foot. What I think has to happen, and let's look at it from the police perspective, they are still police officers, and they still have to serve and protect and also back up their brothers unless they are being convicted of a crime. But in private, I know these police officers are saddened by it. The people who need to be able to bring the attention to it is not the group who is viewed as the perpetrator, but it has to be the legal community. It has to be the community that is being attacked has to address the law enforcement. Because what we don't want to do is allow people to think it's just white going against the law. There are African-American police officers who are getting away with it in our community because we give them a pass. There's African-American police officers who are breaking the law and we don't tell because we give them a pass. There are our children who are killing our own people that we have seen and we know or may know something of. We don't turn them in. We give them a pass because for some reason that silence for that particular group is embedded in what they do. The people who have to bring the attention is those people who are capable and well aware of the law and who have access to the media to bring this out against these criminals. When we're going to be able to attack these police officers is when you open up the USA Today paper and they give you and continue to hammer on the fact that there's something wrong going on with the police officers out there. When you are having a conversation on Oprah, when you're having a conversation on BET, when you're having open dialogue with the NAACP, with the Congressional Black with all these powerful organizations, the National Bar Association, when they have dialogue and address the fact that this is a systemic act, then we will be able to courageously beat down this abusive nature, whether you are a black police officer or a white police officer. It doesn't matter the color, but what matters is behavior. We're going to attack the behavior. If the black police officers are not standing up and owning this behavior, that's fine. Because we kind of understand that they are in the midst of their own clique, their own group, their own professional organization where they cannot openly attack them. But we have other groups in. And get the data. We have other ways to expose them. We need the media, that's radio, that's television, that's the paper, and we need our strong organization. That's POP, that's indicated the strong organization, NAACP, the Urban League, Congressional Black Caucus. When have they, Congressional Black Caucus, said something about this abuse? It should be on TV. And not only them, we need our fellow white men who and women who see this as abusive to speak up, whether it's the church, whether it's various organizations. We need more people because it is not a black-white thing. It is an abusive thing. We can't allow police officers to do this at any time to anybody.
Well, I agree with you on all fronts. And I even understand your perspective with regard to the police officers, albeit I am sensing that to some degree what you said is a pass on the police officers. And I take issue with that. I don't believe they should get a pass and I'm referring specifically to those who are a part of that segment who are being attacked, and in this case, African Americans. For example, if there was an attack on Irish, and at one point there was 100 years ago, mm-hmm. in the Irish, I would expect that those Irish policemen or policewomen would stand up and say, "Wait a minute, wait a minute, y'all shooting my people." Yeah, I'm a part of the police law enforcement community, but I have to step back on this and say this is wrong. And that's what I would expect our African-American police officers to do as well. And I've heard nothing. I've heard literally nothing of the sort. Nothing of the sort. And there are too many cases where it's just obviously wrong. And they should stand up as men, if they call themselves men. Because, see, before they're in a community of a fraternity, in this case they're police officers, they're men. They're part of society, more so. As you were talking about hazing, it's wrong. It's wrong because of the human aspect of it. It's not because it's against the law, not because it's that fraternities, Greek fraternities, aren't supposed to be doing this. It's wrong because it's against humanity. And when does humanity supersede your title? I'm a Kappa. I'm a Q. I'm a Delta Sig, which is, you know, I am. I'm a professional business. I'm a Mason. Yeah, but I'm a man, or I'm a woman, or I'm a human being, and so that I don't give a pass on, and I am losing respect increasingly the longer it goes before I hear something from that specific community. But getting to your point, I saw a pattern. And you were talking about organizations. You were talking about organizations that are MIA. Just MI.
Yeah.
There's no action. And you make a good point. And I believe that ties into your perspective of a potential solution. Can you talk a little bit more about it?
My perspective of a solution is that in order for us to really make a change, we need numbers. We need a grassroots, this is what we're going to do, and we need to include some of the most powerful organizations that are out there, and we need to have their membership in action. And I believe, and I don't know the number-based, membership-based, but I think, and I'm going to name these organizations, and some people may not think much about them, but I believe the NAACP should be in the mix. I believe the Congressional Black Caucus should be in the mix. I believe that you should have another group I had on there, the National Bar Association. I know they're doing some work looking at police brutality in the community. But what I truly believe is that we need to sit down as an organization and figure out how we're going to attack some of the laws that are in place, or to create new laws so that we can protect ourselves from the police. And one of the things I want to do is, and this may not be the correct name, but I have a Police Reform Act. And what that act does is make sure that police officers are properly trained. And I know we're going to talk about the training, but some of the things that I've seen with this abuse of power is the fact that you have a lot of the white police officers feel like they're to have your respect. And they think that they are in control of the situation despite how abusive they have been in our community. And this day, 2015, we're not having it. We're going to videotape it. We're going to videotape it again, and we're going to publish it. And we're going to tell anybody we know when you're being abusive to us. So in order for you to stay on the right side of the track and do the right thing, you got to understand and know the people in your community that you're serving. You can't just work there and not know about the people and not try to connect with the people. Your job is to serve the people. And by serving, you are a servant. It means you're going to do whatever it takes to make sure the people are safe. You're not terrorizing the people. You are charged to serve. And they need training on why is it that the white man feels like he's entitled to that respect. No, you're not. There needs to be something in place under this Police Reform Act that causes us to evaluate who we allow to the police force and what are the requirements. I truly believe in these numbers I'm just going to throw out, but you must serve 200 volunteer hours in the community that you're going to serve in a impoverished community with crime, not as a police officer, as a volunteer. That could be a volunteer at the Boys and Girls Club. That can be a volunteer, can be a volunteer at the homeless shelter. You need to serve that community. You need to understand that community. You need to understand what poverty, crime, and lack of resources does to the community. You need to understand why there is so much bravado among the men there. Why, if people are angry at you, if people don't respect you, are people who look like you, you need to understand why. There's a history. There's a pattern. There's news media that's capturing all this police brutality. And when you look like them, nobody wants to respond to you in a very favorable manner. So I believe that needs to be done as well. Lastly, I think we need to make sure that our police officers have psychological evaluation. From a psychological perspective, I think there's a disconnect going on. I think police officers need to reevaluate the purpose of positive and negative action, especially when crime is involved. A police officer, in my view, when he has the uniform and he has a gun on his hip, he has total control. There should be no reason why a police officer draws a gun on an unarmed person and then shoots them or kills them. There's no reason. A police officer has multiple ways of controlling. First, his action and his behavior. If they weren't so aggressive and demeaning, people wouldn't respond in like terms. Police officers need to have a retraining on their psychological view of people. And they need to have a retraining on how to approach and deal with in hostile situations. I think we need to have a reform act to address all these issues with the police. The police need retraining. If the military was doing things and we were losing wars, we would retrain them. Police officers are losing the battle. They're definitely losing the popularity of that battle in our community. They have no respect. And in communities where there's a predominant police chief of being white, I think you need to replace them. One is because you should feel like anyone who has been well-trained can serve as the chief of police. A lot of times in these communities, we don't have African-American presence at the top. If you don't have African-American presence at the top, you feel like you will be retaliated against if you say something against what the white establishment is doing. Let's put an African-American at the top. Let's make sure this is police properly. Let's make sure we put something in place that watches what the police does. Let's also make sure that if there's any violation, where police officers are shooting unarmed citizens, that there's nothing to evaluate. There's no reason to shoot an unarmed citizen. I don't care what you say. You thought he might have had something. You told him to stop, put it down, what have you. The time is done. We need to have a reform police act where we're now putting police officers in jail for those actions.
Well, I think it's very clear what you're saying is valid. So the approach would be that we become unified, we being the people. So if it's a fraternity, then you need that at a national level. If it's a civic organization, then we need that at a national level. And I believe it would start at a grassroots level and perhaps then morph into a national. For example, you yourself, a member of a prominent fraternity that you're, you know, proud of and reasonably so, might bring that to the attention of your local chapter in one of your next monthly meetings, and then perhaps try to connect with other chapters within the state to make it a state level. Then from there, perhaps connect with other states. I mean, most fraternities have a national convention.
Right.
So, you know, that should be something on an agenda, working together.
We should go straight to the national, organization. There needs to be some way that we as a panel of civil rights activists should, if we're a member of a certain organization, we should write to the national organization and demand that we take action. And when we get support from them, whatever is presented from our national leadership, because we don't have, it will take us years to convince our local leadership to present it to our other bodies around us and then to the state and then to now. I think we should just go straight. We know if you don't know about these issues, then you've been on Mars for a few months. We need to go to the head of our organizations, the head of our organization nationally, and ask and say, we need to come together as a people, a collective people, and draft up some language that will address these issues. These are ideas we have, but there are professional people who are in law, who are in law enforcement, who are in civil rights organizations that will help us draft this up so that it could get some federal or national attention and possibly get us some police reform. Because there's obviously something is wrong with the police force. There's something in their training. There's something in their hiring. There's something in their, if they've been there for a long time, their lack of training, their lack of professional development that causes them to maintain this poorly designed model that is terrorizing our community. And we need, Darryl, we need to draft that letter, and it could be the same letter with a different letterhead to each of the organizations with somebody else's name at the bottom of it. But we need to come together and demand that we do it as a group, because it's difficult for Kevin Porter to go to City Hall and say something. But when your letterhead says the NAACP or the International Headquarters of Kappa Alpha Psi or the International Headquarters of Omega Psi Phi, then that brings some attention. Or if it says the Congressional Black Caucus, because we have Greek members on the Congressional Black Caucus. One of our Grand Pomark used to be the president of the National Bar Association. So we have the power. We just need to go. We just need to come together and agree upon some type of format we need to address this in and get support from those top people and get buy-in, because something needs to be done. If your organization is somebody else and nobody else is handling it.
Well, I would agree with you that we do need to convalesce at a national level. But I would say that then the call to action would be for all the local organizations to reach out to their national. And
yes,
when that national is getting letters from Texas, from Ohio, from New York, from New Jersey, from California, Arizona, I can go on and on, Colorado, you know, then it makes a difference. Maryland, Georgia,
yes,
Florida. Now national has to say, okay, what's going on? We're going to have to step it up and step out and do something with that. So that's the call for our listeners. If you're a member of a fraternity or a sorority or a civic community organization, and this does not have to be a black organization, mind you. I have listeners across all persuasions, I'm very proud to say. There were some whites that helped Harriet Tubman. You can believe it. So
right,
we're going to have a complete mix in this, and that's where the difference will be made. So regardless, let's reach out to our national, whatever organization we may be in. I'm in a civic community organization, the Frontiers. We have a national. So whatever it is, let's make a commitment that we won't let another month go by. And if possible, we won't let a week go by that we are not having this conversation with someone in our local organization in order to get this message sent up to our national organization. That would be the charge. And for lack of anything else right now, what we're seeking is reform. And we can call it a Police Reform Act. And the beautiful thing, if we can find ourselves working together, and it doesn't necessarily have to be Police Reform Act, one of our challenges is trying to galvanize across numerous organizations. You know, what do we call this? You know, the call to action? What if an organization in California has a name they want to call it, you know, Take Back Our Community Act, and then someone in the South wants to call it one thing, and then someone in the upper Northeast wants to call it. You know, the bottom line is, let's get a message out to our national organizations. That's the key, that we want to do something. Let's let that hit the media, because at a point, it's going to hit the media when nationals come out. And at that national level, if it's a civic and community organization, then that national level should reach out to other civic and community organizations. If it's a sorority, that sorority should reach out to other sororities. As I see it, that's what made the difference in this country. When people began to galvanize across states, that's when change began. I think that's an excellent thought, and taking nothing away from you. The thought's been out there. They say if a thought is put out somewhere, someone thinking a similar or the same thought. So now we're putting this out into the ethers of the universe now, so that it can now galvanize itself. A police reform, call it an act, call it a potential law, an amendment, whatever we want to call
mm-hmm.
it, but a Police Reform Act. That's the call. Let's start talking this up, folks. Starting this evening, if you're listening to this live, after the program, have some discussion with your family, with your friends, with your colleagues. Why can't we come together and have one mass movement? This is just wrong. As I said, this isn't just about blacks, but we should be at the forefront as African Americans. But you can believe there are non-African Americans that know right from wrong and in no way endorse this heinous, hateful, evil acts that are going on. We just need to open the door for them to join in this movement. because this is a movement that's truly, truly taking off. Kevin, I thank you so much. Let's continue this work. We're not going to let up. That's one of the problems that have happened in history. As you have an idea, and it actually leaves the dock, but then it doesn't go very far towards its destination. We're not letting up on this. We're going to continue.
We're going to get it, girl, because you and I are going to hold each other accountable. we're going to follow up with each other and ask about the ideal. And tomorrow I'm going to start drafting a letter and trying to identify who I'm going to send it to. I already know who I'm going to send it to. And then we're going to generate some more momentum and more momentum. And as we talk to people, as we plant the seed, and as it grows, and we'll come together next week, and we'll talk about what we've done and our successes and our roadblocks, and then we'll continue to grow. But we're going to fight this because it's not going away, and being reactive is not winning us anything. We need to be proactive and get ready and then put it in the media as a collective group, as a strong body. We are strong, powerful people. We're over 30 million African Americans in this country. We can make the change. And I think we all are sick to our stomach in what we've seen in the recent years, police abuse.
Yeah, I don't think there's a fence here. I think this is truly a sink or swim moment in our history. At the statistic, which I want everyone to emblazon this in your brain, etch it in the granite of your mind. And this isn't just for blacks. If you care at all about humanity, any segment, if you're on my mail list, you'll see this anytime you get an email coming from Daryl Clark. It says, for any segment of our society to fall out or behind in mass is an affront on the entire society. It's a take from Martin Luther King's famous quote about all of us being caught in an inescapable network of mutuality. You know, you cannot be what you ought to be until I'm what I ought to be, and I certainly can't be what I ought to be. And we got to get out of this threefold sickness, at least twofold sickness, which says, not my problem. I'm doing okay. I got enough money to send my child to college. I got enough money to buy myself a decent car and live in a decent apartment or home. I'm not getting myself out there and mess up my thing. I can't help anybody else till I've helped myself. If you get into the not my problem mindset, you should never fall off your lip. Why is there so much crime in the world? Why are so many people starving when there's so much resources? Don't you dare ever ask why. Don't ask why. If you've got the mindset of, I'm not going to get involved in that. Because that's why. And then the other issue, the crabs in the barrel. That I know it's me or him or me or her. That's not necessarily the truth. It's not the truth. Let me stop and correct myself. And then the third thing, when you see a Judas, call him or her out. If you see someone, like you talked about that bad cop, or you got that neighbor, or you got that person that you know is doing wrong in your community, it may be a relative. The first thing I would say is, if it is someone you can talk to them. But at some point, you may have to wipe the dust from your feet and call them out. And those three things are going to be essential. We got to get out of the not my problem, the crabs in the barrel, and the not holding those around us accountable. So, yeah, hold me accountable, my brother, and I'll certainly be holding you accountable. We didn't have time to take comments today, but we will have time for comments next week. What were you saying?
Have a good evening, good brother, and thanks for the show. And it's been past time. Let's get moving.
It is past time. You're absolutely correct. Because it is true. We are in this together. And not just as African Americans. We are truly in this together. And together we can make a difference. We can make a change. Tell someone about Progressive News Weekly. The archives will be up right after the program ends, and so you can refer them to this particular program. This is powerful. There's power in knowledge. There's power in love, but it must be acted upon. Mr. Kevin Porter, I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to share with us, draw up at least an outline of a draft of a solution. Shout out to Mr. Lawrence Hamm, who right now is doing some due diligent work to make a difference with the upcoming march this weekend. Go to Facebook. And even if you're not in Jersey, just hit the website. There's energy in that. Just hit that website. And if you don't remember what it was, send me an email to Daryl, D-A-R-R-Y-L, _ C-L-A, 1-8 at msn.com. But the Facebook is Million People's March Against Police Brutality, Racial Injustice. Click on that blue envelope and invite all your friends, and then click on the black one and share. Thank you for another edition of Progressive News Weekly, because we wouldn't be here if it weren't for you. We're all in this together. Thanks and shout out to our engineer, Mr. Cecil McDaniel. And of course, as always, if you love someone, tell them. You don't know what tomorrow will bring.
Every time we hear the music and feel this love together, we got the kind.